CB Shuckin' Jive.
All you racing fans, stand up, clap your feet. I mean, clap your heads.
Welcome to the Goat Rodeo.
CRN Studios in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. This is Racing Through History.
Hello, race fans. Welcome to another edition of the Goat Rodeo. My name is Jeff Gilder. I am the host because nobody else will do it. I took the job, so I'm here. Deal with it. All right. Hope everybody's having a great night tonight. We are here in always beautiful and warm and sunny Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. It's going to be 75 Friday, guys. I don't care what temperature was last night.
All right. Or the night before.
Yeah, or the night before. It's going to be 75 and sunny here in always sunny Myrtle Beach on Friday. Don't you wish you were here? Everybody except Alex. We know Alex lives in always sunny Florida.
Which could be colder than here.
Could be. Anyway, tickled to death to be here. Let's get on with it and let folks know what's going on. Let's start on the with the folks that aren't in the studio tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, we have the ambassador to Hand South Carolina on Skype coming in tonight with us. Coastal Jack Walker is in the house. CJ, how you doing, buddy?
Man, doing great. Sitting here in the capital of Hand.
The capital in Hand. There you go, man.
That's good. Capital building.
Yeah. So how did your cabinet vetting go? Okay. Are you through?
Oh yeah. I'm about done. We bought a couple six packs last night and knocked it out.
That's good, man. That's some serious.
That sounds promising.
That's some serious vetting right there.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So are we going to have a Carolina Race Place historic race finish tonight?
Oh man, you bet. We're going to Charlotte tonight. 1977.
1977 in Charlotte. Oh, big fish and chickens on the menu.
You got
it. All right, cool. Can't wait to hear what the details are behind that. Carolina Race Place Historic Race Finish is brought to you by CarolinaRaceplace.zoomshare.com. Brought to you in part by Bobby's Auto Parts, the home of the endless warranty.
Presented
by Bobby's Auto Parts, the home of the endless warranty. Out west in the lair, the legend is there. How you doing tonight, sir?
I'm doing very well, thank you, Jeff. It sounds like you guys. Now, who is in the studio? You and Bopper and Hugh?
Me, Bopper, yep. And Hugh.
That's it.
And Jackson Hand. I'm up here in Columbia, so okay, we're spread out.
Tim, I made a real big pitch for Erin to be on the radio with us tonight, and she declined.
She declined. She didn't want any part of it.
Erin, who is Erin?
She's our latest hire here in Zeus Labs.
Sorry.
She sure puts Jeff to shame.
Yeah.
Yes, she does.
A lot of people to shame, man.
I'm not touching that one.
Yeah, man, she's really cool. Glad to have Erin on our team now. You guys will get to meet her somewhere along the line. So, Tim, you got a legendorial on tap tonight?
I do have a legendorial on tap tonight.
What's it about?
Well, we're going to kind of talk about maybe it's cold outside.
Okay.
I am assuming that you guys know about Carl Edwards.
Yes.
What? No.
Yeah, he's
And also
to be sure,
John West Townley.
Where did you see that at?
Hold it. We got to have a little. We got to play this stuff right now. All right. All right, Cole.
No, so look, where in the world did you see that?
We can talk about that later, right?
Yeah, we'll talk about that later. All right. Thank you, Tim.
I screwed that up. I just wanted to. It was like nobody was going to say anything about
well,
it.
Well, we've got to get the show going.
We've
got
to get the intros in first.
He's just trying to steal everybody's line.
So let's get over here on the other side of the glass from me, the splitters here, Hewlin Overcast, the Hughes Views on the news. It's always news when Hughes involved. You know, sometimes some don'ts, sometimes some do's, sometimes some mews, but it's always news.
They're always politically correct.
It's always politically
yeah, right,
correct.
Yeah, right, sure. And if you believe that, I got a bridge in New York I want to sell you.
How you doing tonight, Splitter?
I'm doing good, I guess.
Good. You got anything for us tonight?
Nothing but musings about today's news, but somebody just sprung a new one on me.
There you go. All right.
I'm going to be quiet until I hear a little more.
And to his left, the bopper from Shalott, North Carolina. Bobby's Auto Parts.
Jefferson.
Yeah, how you doing, man?
Boy, doing good.
Good to see you, too, man. Good to see you, too.
We got some news to talk about tonight.
Yeah, you got some of that on your segment?
It kind of depends on how everything else goes.
All right.
We are ambidextrous.
We're going to draw names out of the hat tonight, see who goes first. All right? Let's see. Who wants to draw the names?
Tim go. He's got a lot of stuff.
All right, Tim. Yeah. We just drew your name out of the hat, Tim. You're on the block, buddy. Take it away.
I really don't have a lot of stuff, but I have entitled A Legendorial Baby Is Cold Outside, because when I wrote it Sunday, it was definitely that. This is the name of a song played usually around Christmas, is it not? If not so, forgive me, for it is not my intention to construe flirting with the use of baby. But that song came to mind as I came in from church a short while ago. It was cold, 33 degrees at just past noon. But it was 21 when I went out to get the paper this morning. Just too cold for this heat-loving old man. But as I came in and sat down to write the legendorial, warmer thoughts came to mind as I thought back over what Januarys were like so many years ago. Do you remember when the season started at that 9-turn road course in Riverside, California?
Yes.
Do you remember how that interloping Dan Gurney would win like the first 4 events before someone could dethrone him?
Yep.
Yeah.
Remember back in the 60s when we were lucky to find the race broadcast on the local AM station?
Yes.
Absolutely.
The FCC had rules then that the radio stations had to lower their wattage output at sunset for reasons my simple mind still don't comprehend. But that meant catching the last half of the race from California involved listening to so much static that it was difficult to tell exactly which driver was leading and who was out of the race. But no matter, the weather in South Carolina back then was usually cold in January, and we all had the belief that the weather in California was always sunny, warm, and beautiful. Did any of you think it was unfair that the sport born and raised in the southeastern United States would start its season on the West Coast? Do you remember that for a number of years it ended there as well?
Yes.
Just at Riverside, yep. And then at Ontario, which was an oval, not a road course. Back in those days, it didn't bother me. As long as NASCAR was racing and even listening to a static-filled AM radio, I was in my element. 3 thoughts come to mind this afternoon. First up is wishing it would get a little warmer, a little faster than the weatherman is calling for. Hear that, Alex?
Got somebody we can blame now.
Yeah. Blame him and bribe him. Secondly, I sort of wish the season still started in January, as January is such an anticlimactic month. In my world, Thanksgiving starts the holiday season, which ends on Christmas Day. I don't especially consider New Year's Day as a viable holiday. The New Year kicks off and television stations change their schedules, at least the ones I watch, and everything seems to be struggling to be new and different. While anticipating things cracking up in Daytona in a matter of days, it's still a bleak coldness about January for a race fan like me. The third thought goes back to Riverside and how I love the thought of a racing on a road course. The first time I remember seeing any race footage from Riverside was in the movie Redline 7000. I was fascinated by the way the drivers flipped those cars around those twisting turns, sometimes taking them through the dirt, but it was a different type of racing I liked from the start. I had attended the November 1963 Augusta 510 at Three Mile Road Course in Augusta, Georgia, but it was different as most of those turns were banked at least a little, and being able to see only small parts of the track at one time from our infield hiking, we were missing some action I wish I could have seen from high above that speedway. I still enjoy road course racing the two times a year NASCAR sees fit to run either at Sonoma or Watkins Glen. Even so, it's not the same as it was. Drivers don't seem to manhandle the cars through the turns or exhibit any particularly special talent like Dan Gurney, Parnelli Jones, or A.J. Foyt. It took a few years for our NASCAR round track boys to get the hang of turning right and left. These days, with all the special cars for road courses, it seems it is more the car than it is the driver pushing to the front. Oh, we have some good ones these days, but the rarity of talent is overshadowed by the money put into the special road course cars. Although it's not NASCAR stock car racing, I have developed an interest in the 24 hours of Daytona. The racing is quite different, the cars are so different, and the names I'm trying to pronounce aren't Petty, Pearson, or Baton. The design of the cars, if you can really call them that, leaves little for kids to dream about for the future, because the future is here. Is anyone old enough to remember when General Motors would have had the Fisher Body Design Contest back in the day? I remember entering that contest maybe 2 years while in high school. The cars I designed then, in the early 60s, resemble some of the cars in that twice around the clock contest. I never won, by the way, or just imagined what you might be driving. I do sort of miss Riverside and mounting on my bed as a teen, listening to the broadcast and imagining how warm it must have been in California. I was listening that day in 1964 when Joe Weatherly crashed in turn 9. That was a huge blow to me because Joe had always been so good to me. Riverside is a part of NASCAR history, not to be forgotten, if for no other reason than contributions to the sport and for the loss of one of our best drivers that day in turn 9. The shame here, in my opinion, is that many have forgotten, and the younger generation of fans, for the most part, never heard of the track, or of some of the great drivers who ran there and won there. But now we are counting down the days until Daytona. Daytona, the magic trial located in Florida. You would think, being Florida, even February would be a warm race. Not always, believe me. Don't ever forget those tracks of the past or the men who drove the cars which required driver manhandling with no power steering and no power brakes, even more magnified by the outside road course. Gotta go. It's getting late to broadcast, and the stat is already pretty bad. Back to you, Jeff. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Tim. Signal was getting a little weak there on the. It must be that radio band.
Must have been the AM fuzzy broadcast.
That's the Russians.
The Russians are hacking.
It's the Russians.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if the Russians
I
were
have
trying
a
to
strong belief it was the Russians. I don't have any proof.
Don't have any proof. I'm pretty sure it
but
is.
Don't y'all agree that it was the Russians?
Let's sanction them.
I think it was. We have strong.
Just tell them to cut it out.
So let's talk about Carl Edwards.
The 800-pound gorilla in the room.
The 800-pound gorilla in the room.
It broke out of nowhere today without any warning. It caught the whole racing community, world, press, everybody off guard. It was leaked by Fox Sports this morning. I first saw it on Twitter about, 8:30, 9 o'clock.
That's something you probably wouldn't have said 5 years ago.
No.
Right. And then, you know.
Didn't even know what that meant
and
5 years ago.
The rest of as the day wore on, there was no more news came out other than just various other people saying the same thing.
Isn't there supposed to be a formal announcement tomorrow?
There's two press conferences scheduled tomorrow at Joe Gibbs. I guess one to announce Daniel Suarez is filling the seat, and the other to possibly shed some light on why Carl Edwards is leaving it. But that's just my spin on it. But there are two press conferences scheduled. His contract, Carl Edwards' contract with JGR, ran through this year. It was not a contract issue.
Huh.
And I think that the J.G. Joe Gibbs would readily admit that Suarez was not really ready to come up to the Cup level anyway. He's been running in Xfinity, but the plan to move him up was not this year. So
what does that mean if the contract runs through 2017 and he's retiring now? Is that a lawsuit? Is that some kind of buyout? What do you have to do?
I would think the contract has to be terminated some kind of way between the two parties.
I wonder if there's a dodge in Carl Edwards' future.
I have heard that rumored already, that there's the possibility that might be where he's going.
I thought he was retiring.
Well, it's worded funny.
It says that he is doing all this to pursue interest outside the car.
That was the term, outside the car, which...
And maybe he's going to be a car owner.
Yes.
Maybe he's going to pick up one of those charters.
Well, Bobby and I have had some of this conversation this afternoon, even some this morning. Yeah, I get the privilege of hanging around 4 hours a day, 5 days a week with Bobby, so I get a lot of Bobby's inside information.
The other I read late today that Fox Sports was the first one to break this story, which was early this morning, which leads one, you might could speculate, well, if Fox Sports knew it before anybody else, maybe there's a deal in the works for Carl to become a broadcaster with Fox, and perhaps the timing had to be right now in order to to make everything work. He had to make a move now. So, I mean, that's just a theory, since they knew it before anybody else.
Yeah.
Perhaps that's an angle, but that's, purely speculation.
Well, that's good speculation. That makes sense, really.
Yeah, Carl is excellent in the broadcast. Yeah. He is really good.
There are so many rumors and speculations going around. It could be any of those or none of those. Because at this point, none of us know. I guess we'll find out some more during the press conferences tomorrow as to what the intentions are. Me personally, some of the teams, there seem to be friction between the owner and the driver, and others don't. And I did not perceive that there was any friction between Joe Gibbs and Carl. So, maybe it was something that he was given the opportunity to fill in the blank, car owner, broadcaster, whatever, and Joe simply released him a year early so he could pursue whatever.
I would guess that it wasn't Joe's preference to do that. I think they've been scrambling on this Suarez thing. They've been working like crazy to make that happen. That was not their plan.
I wouldn't agree with that.
You know, they already had a sponsor locked in and all that kind of stuff. So you're exactly right.
From Joe Gibbs, that was the worst case scenario in January, for Carl Edwards or any of his drivers to.
Well, it you say in January, but at least it's in the off season. Well, it's not like it happened in July.
Well, it couldn't have hardly happened in July.
Right.
But still, there's no way to put a positive spin on this if you're Joe Gibbs. I'm really glad Carl left now. Now I can get on with putting somebody in that's never driven a Cup car.
Well, let me ask you this. Wasn't Erik Jones, isn't he driving a development driver?
He has farmed out to Furniture Row.
And he will be driving the other Furniture Row car this coming season, the 17 season, won't he?
Yes. And so now I'm sure they regret doing all of that, because they would have.
Yeah, I would have thought Erik Jones would have been. But NASCAR wants to get Suarez in there because Suarez represents International.
Well, that's the theory.
Yeah.
I'm sure NASCAR's preference wants, and they all knew about this. A little bit ahead of us, and I'm sure they was all for the Suarez angle.
So I guarantee you, they were for that.
All right. So, That brings us to Hugh's Views on the News and tonight's Muse. Take it away, Splitter.
Well, I don't have a whole lot other than the same speculation. What about John West Townley? After I sat down behind this microphone, I find that there's some news about him retiring during the off season. So, what's everybody heard about that? I have heard zero about it until a few minutes ago.
Well, what I heard when I was going back and reading everything on Carl Edwards. You know, I read it's on Fox, it's on Jayski, it's on NASCAR.com, Yahoo Sports, and in one of those, it says right at the last, just a sentence, not even a paragraph, it says, joining Carl Edwards and departing NASCAR is John West Townley, period. Not that he drove trucks, or not that he drove Xfinity, or what he did, just joining Carl Edwards and his departure from NASCAR's John West Townley.
How old is he? He's not that old, is he?
No, he's 20-something.
He's not old enough to retire, but right. In my opinion, he's always been on pretty thin ice as far as a ride and sponsorship.
Well, he had some problems. He had to be reinstated by NASCAR a few years ago, if I remember correctly, after some
sort of an incident,
substance abuse problems.
I don't remember what it was, but yeah, but that was apparently very quickly resolved, and I don't know that. Of course, NASCAR in true form, they never did produce a lot of information about it, but it was also swept under the rug very quickly. So I'm wondering, either they didn't have any good hard information, or the information they had wasn't severe enough to do much more than slap him on the wrist and say, okay, you've got to attend our school, whatever it is they call it, and then they reinstated him. But to me, he was always, and I don't like using this term, but he was an also-ran. He never was a premier, in my opinion, driver. And let's face it, today, if you don't have a big-time sponsor you're dragging with you or an exceptional driving talent, you're not going to make it.
That John West Townley news, I've just been informed, is also on Jay Ski's Trucks page. Okay?
What do they say about it? Well, you haven't read it.
I can't get out of, you know, if I get out of my screen here, there's no telling where y'all are going to go. And I may never be able to find you back.
I think Bobby's the only one that can cast around and come back. I'm the same way. If I click off of this, I'm done.
Yeah, that's it. But is it not true, or what I've heard in the past, that John West Townley's father owns Zaxby's?
That is correct.
He was always sponsored by them, it seems like.
Yeah, money, it would seem, is there. Have you ever been by Zaxby's restaurant with an empty parking lot?
Yeah, there's one in Shallote.
And they have empty parking lots.
Well, they also don't have a store yet.
there's one under construction.
They just bulldozed the grill.
Which was the old Hardee's.
Which was the old Hardee's of, I don't remember what they called it, of Tammy fame, the movie Tammy. Anybody remember that?
I remember that. Wasn't it... Debbie Reynolds that played Tammy?
No. It was Melissa McCarthy.
Fairly recently.
Oh, I didn't see the recent.
And she supposedly robbed the fast food joint that she was working at, had a paper bag over her head. But the fame of the old Hardee's building in Shallote was that was the movie set for it. And now there's a track hoe made short work of it last week.
But isn't that going to lessen the star power for 2017 with Tony Stewart gone, now Carl Edwards is gone? Without a doubt, Jeff Gordon is gone. The big names, are they going to have to? It's going to be a rebuilding year for several years.
It's going to be really interesting to see who, figuratively speaking, steps forward and fills the void. I never did see Carl Edwards as a front runner, but certainly Tony Stewart was front runner as far as character goes, somebody that was readily recognizable and a lot of people followed. So, yeah, I agree with you, Bobby. I think there's going to be a real void in the front row this year.
They're getting Junior back. If Junior gets another concussion, what do y'all think is going to happen?
He's out the door. He's out the door.
Well, you got Chase Elliott. He's got a lot of star power behind him.
Yeah, there's some potential stars in the works, but none of them are really there yet.
That's what I say. Right. It's going to be interesting to watch who rises to the top this year. There's certainly room for it, and there are some characters out there.
But the newcomers, it's going to take them a while to take over the fan base.
Exactly. The fan base is another whole story, because that, unlike buying a sponsor, the fan base you have to earn.
Yeah. All right, cool. That's Hugh's views on the news, and sometimes do's and don'ts and views. And
sometimes it's just plain old rambling.
Sometimes he just rambles. I can't help it. All right, let's see who's next. Next name out of the hat, the Bopper. You're up, son. What do you got, bud?
I ran across something last week, and I was able to find it again right then. And it's an interview with an editor or a writer from Auto Week, the magazine, with Jack Roush, about, you know, what's going on in NASCAR, in particular, what's not going on with him. And some of the history and so on of Roush racing. And here was the really interesting stuff, at least to me. Here's a question from Auto Week. When did NASCAR go from nuts and bolts and pencil and paper to space-age technology with aerodynamicists and engineers and computers? That's the question. All right, here's the answer from Jack Roush. Before the Car of Tomorrow in 2007, each manufacturer determined its own destiny from an aero perspective. But NASCAR president Bill France wanted the cars to be like IROC, where drivers and technicians could figure out how to get the most out of them. And then former IndyCar team owner Cal Wells had come from sports cars in 2000 with a cadre of engineers that had never been seen around NASCAR. He brought a new approach to analysis and to predicting what would happen. Those things started us down the path to fuel injection and data acquisition where we are now. Okay, so then Auto Week says, you've said you were a little slow to accept some of the new technology. Is that what has put your organization behind? Excuse me, Jack Roush. Traditional NASCAR racing had its charm. It was quaint, and people in little shops raced against one another with things held close to the vest. Now, that's the era that we all know.
Amen,
and
brother. Yep.
That was it in one sentence. Old Cat in the Hat did a good job of summing up everything. Traditional NASCAR had its charm. It was quaint, and people in little shops raced against one another with things held close to the vest. But as Formula One-like technology and computer application of analysis and prediction and data acquisition came aboard, it took away the simple craftsmanship and competition that had been there for 30 or 40 years. This is where we are now. Some people might think I'm backward, but I have an appreciation for education and science and technology. I'm certainly not resistant to bringing science and technology into our lives, but in the old days, my crew chief, Steve Neal, for example, might see a right front fender that didn't look right, so he'd change it without the benefit of a wind tunnel readout. He wasn't an engineer, but he was right more times than not. So, Here's order. Why haven't your teams been as competitive in recent years as they were up until about 2013? Okay, here's Jack. Several things have frustrated me about the last 4 or 5 years. We got behind on predictive software for the simulation program.
That's a whole lot of mouthful.
Hello. And, you know, this has stopped the interview for Jack Roush was kind of a technical guy to start with.
Yeah, he was probably more technical than most of them during his time.
So he was sort of a technical guy anyway. But he says, we got behind on the predictive software for the simulation program. I'm not blaming anyone but myself for going down a path that was ill-advised. So our simulations didn't work well for a while. And for a period of time, we didn't have access to the scale model wind tunnel programs that some manufacturers had. In recent years, Ford has provided both that and the predictive software that works very well. We weren't on the leading edge of the computer analysis of airflow and cooling system problems and downforce issues. When those things crept in, it put us behind. I had good people through all that, but maybe not enough with enough particular education and experience. So then they say, well, what role do your drivers play in the recent struggles? And Jack says, I don't have a senior driver. Greg Biffle, who announced November 21st that he was leaving the team after 19 seasons and 19 Cup Series wins, is certainly a good driver, but he's at the end of his career. Trevor Bayne and Ricky Stenhouse Jr. haven't advanced to the point where they can race for wins every race, and that's not their fault. It's mine for not providing cars with the speed they need. There's always been a hand-in-glove relationship in my programs between drivers and engineers and technical people. If a driver's not able to understand what he needs and can't ask for things, a lot of times we're not as quick as we should be to recognize what the issue is and where our opportunity is. So that concludes the interview. But does that even sound like the same subject that we once knew was fans of?
No, that's a whole lot of the problem with NASCAR that I see it. It has gotten so technical and so out of the realm of reality, if you will. You sure can't buy one of those cars on the showroom floor anymore. Every aspect of it is computer designed and aerodynamically perfect
and
equal.
And interestingly enough, he says right in the outset that Bill France Jr. wanted all the cars just the same. Now, that's never been a really published fact. It was obvious that it was true, but I've never read that
anywhere. I've never heard it spoken, but yeah, and not from that standpoint, but I've heard numerous people said, yeah, they're nothing but IROC cars. The whole concept is that they started with the IROC cars, which were all identical, supposedly. So
that's where, you know, we've kicked that idea around a lot of times. Where did the cookie cutter come from? It came from the top.
Yeah. Well, you kind of knew if NASCAR was the one that mandated it, it had to have come from NASCAR.
So this notion of somehow all of this is making stuff cheaper and more accessible to the little guy, holy moly.
That is hogwash.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Who said that?
Well, I mean, that is
NASCAR. That was their, you know, keep claiming all these changes that they've made will make it cheaper for the little guy.
Yeah, they standardize the car and do this and do that. And, you know, on the surface, it's all about, you know, curbing cost here and curbing cost there.
But every time they make a change, it costs them hundreds of thousands of dollars, and every team has to make the change, or they're out. They're either non-compliant and can't race, or they're non-competitive and don't need to show up.
So now, if you ain't got the predictive software, or even if you have it, if it's not the best predictive software, if it's not as good as somebody else's.
You're still not competitive.
You're still not competitive.
Yeah.
So that's... So who had the good one, obviously, at the end of the year? Rick Hendrick.
Or General Motors.
Where's Greg Biffle going? Is he out?
He's not going anywhere.
He's out the door. I don't think, my opinion, I don't think anybody's going to hire him. Who was it made the statement that he was at the end of his career?
Well, Jack Rouse said that.
Yeah.
Well, how many several teams have already folded up from the end of last year to this year? Richard Petty, for example, lost a car. Jack Roush has lost a car. What the number seven car that Reagan Smith drove? The Baldwin guy, what's his name?
Tommy Baldwin.
He's folded up tent.
And all of this, all of these charters now become, to me, worth less money because you've gotten three minimum year.
And then here's really, considering all that Jack Roush has said, and I believe he's dead on the, he's been there and done that, he's in the middle. At the end of the day, this is what really kills me. At the end of the day, has all of this stuff made the show any better?
No. Made it worse.
The answer is no.
With France wanting the IROC cars.
Yeah,
Start with the car tomorrow.
And that has to be the ultimate objective. If we have to improve the show, the technology does not necessarily do it, and in this case, it hasn't.
And it has effectively eliminated the little shop all around the country that Jack Roush made reference to. The guy that runs the independent garage in Daytona and keeps a car under a tarp in the back of the shop and drags it out a few days.
I gotta adjust the camera. Bobby's moved out of frame.
Oh, okay. I can move back in front.
Just sit down, Bobby. You'll be all right. but the little guy that has the independent garage is now not able to compete on any level.
He's long gone.
There were dozens of cars that would show up for basically just the two races at Daytona, and a lot of them were local.
But I don't know if you can put the genie back in the bottle.
I don't think you can. The technology has made what we raced 20 years ago completely obsolete, and what we're racing today is not the model that us old timer race fans want to see.
Well, it must not be the model anybody wants to see at this point. They're tearing down stands instead of adding them.
I drew Bobby a very crude picture the first of the week, and every time I hear the word NASCAR, I think of this crude picture. It was that of a porcelain toilet with grandstands all around the edge of it, and the water swirling down in the center of it, with race cars going right down the drain.
You
got
to stop eating chili before you go to bed at night.
but that image to me is just what's happening to NASCAR. We're just seeing them going down the toilet. And oh yes, the grandstands are just dotted around. They're not solid because they've torn them down and sold them.
Well, do you think Monster's going to help?
Monster, I think, is going to have to change the face of NASCAR.
They're already debating the format changes right now.
Yes.
Last week we were talking about they can't change for this year because it's set in stone. They're already deliberating right now how this year is going to look.
I don't see that they have any choice. I don't know that they'll be right, and I don't know that it'll be the answer. But in my opinion, they are going to have to dinker with the model. If they don't, it goes back to my model of the toilet.
I can't let that go by. Danny Whitener just said it gets crappier every year.
Well, y'all, my thing's not picking up chat.
What do you think your thing's not picking it up?
I mean, I'm on chat. The last thing that it says is Patrick Reynolds said, "I am enjoying the music playing." I guess I might need to refresh.
There's something wrong.
Yeah, you need. Yep. You're several posts behind.
Obviously. Oh man, look at what they have here. Holy smoke.
Technology
is a wonderful thing, ain't it, Tim? Technology.
It's your predictive software. Stop working on it.
Hold on. I got to call Vladimir.
It's going to be really interesting this year to just sort of sit back and watch and see what changes they make and see whether or not.
Well, some of the things on the table is halftime breaks.
Yeah. Yep.
Or quarter time breaks.
Which I don't think is going to help a thing. The only thing that's going to help is it's going to cut down cost. And cost is going to be a big thing going forward.
Yep.
The thing that they're not doing, and they think that that's going to solve it, is something that I think would be great, and that's the heat races. But the reason they don't want to do that is they don't want to eliminate any sponsors being in the main show. So they think they take quarter time breaks or halftime breaks, you accomplish the same thing, and everybody stays in the show. So I don't get it.
Well, the thing about the and if you think back to the most all of us remember the early days of the truck series, they didn't have pit crews. You were in on an early truck.
Yes.
And they did a 15 or a 30 minute break in the middle of the race.
I can't remember how long it was, but it was a solid break.
Hard break,
yeah.
And you went in and parked them.
Well, how did the fans respond to all that?
I was in the pits. I couldn't tell you.
I was working
my guts out.
Ultimately, what counts.
But the thing was that you and how many others serviced that truck during that downtime?
Well, we had a small crew. There was like five of us.
Well,
we did everything.
To me, that's a big crew when you stop and think of the size crews.
But, dude, we were moving weight around. We were changing out shocks. We were changing springs during that break. We did everything during that break. It wasn't like a pit stop. You didn't just go in and change tires and gas it up.
You remember the days that Junior Johnson used to change engines?
Yep.
Yeah. So they had it down to under 8 minutes. They could change an engine.
And get back in the race.
Yes, and get back in the race. So
and then NASCAR outlawed that.
Yeah, they outlawed that.
Right. Yeah.
There's
speaking of Roush, I just made me think of something I'd forgotten about when we were at North Wilkesboro with the R&D truck. We were running really, really good. Kelly had run up front all day. And Jack Roush came and stood right at our pit wall and stood there and stared at us and watched us through the whole pit stop change. And we were doing stuff that they didn't have to do. We had two befores in the frame rails to space out the lead weights. We didn't have the heavy metal.
Spent uranium?
No.
Lead?
Nah, God, it's on the tip of my tongue. I'll think of it.
It's heavier than lead. I know what you're talking about.
Anyway, we were doing all kinds of stuff, raggedy-ass blue jeans and T-shirts and stuff like that, and he stood there with his finger on his chin and watched us and never spoke. I spoke to him. I said, "Hey, Mr. Roush, how you doing?" He didn't even acknowledge me.
No, he was.
We were kicking his ass on the racetrack.
Yeah, he was learning.
Yeah, they didn't like the fact that R&D truck though was getting a lot of favor. That was a Dodge R&D truck, and I'm gonna tell you something, man. It didn't fit. I've told you all this before. It didn't fit a single template. I mean, but it went through inspection. They made sure it got through. It didn't fit anything. It didn't meet any of the criteria. All right, Coastal Jack, it's time now for the Carolina Race Place historic race finish. Right from CarolinaRaceplace.zoomshare.com, presented to you in part by Bobby's Auto Parts, a home of the endless warranty. Take it away, Ambassador Jack.
Oh, you got it all in, man. That was good.
That's good, man. Yeah.
All right. Tonight we are going to Charlotte, North Carolina for the 300-mile late model sportsman race, October the 8th, 1977. A 300-mile late model sportsman race was held at Charlotte Motor Speedway the day before the National 500 on October the 8th, 1977. The World Service Life Insurance Company of Fort Worth, Texas, was the title sponsor for the race for the fifth year. Time trials were held on Wednesday to set the first 10 starting positions. Darrell Waltrip, driving a Chevrolet, won the pole position with a speed of 160.409 miles per hour around the mile-and-a-half track. Starting on the outside front row was Donnie Allison. The third and fourth place qualifiers were Ray Hendrick and Neil Bonnet. Two 20-lap qualifying races were held on Thursday to set the remaining 34 starting positions. The two races were won by Dale Earnhardt and Richard Childress. When the 300 took the green flag on Saturday, Darrell Waltrip led the first lap. Waltrip continued to lead in the early part of the race. When the caution flag came out for Jack Ingram's engine problem on lap 79, both Waltrip and Donnie Allison got caught in the pits. Lenny Pond took the lead when the race was restarted. Waltrip, with new tires, charged through the field after the race returned to green. On lap 120, Joe Milliken, driving his Dodge, spun out on the home stretch, bringing out another caution flag. On the restart, Pond and Waltrip battled for the lead, with Allison not far behind. Both cars got together on lap 125, and Pond ended up in the wall and out of the race. Waltrip had minor damage but continued to lead. He was closely followed by Dave Marcus, Ray Hendrick, and Donnie Allison. On lap 152, Sterling Marlin and Red Farmer collided, resulting in both cars spinning out and bringing out the fifth caution flag of the day. The sky was very gray as Donnie Allison tried to pass Waltrip for the lead, but he couldn't quite clear him. With 30 laps to go, raindrops began to fall on the backstretch. Rain started to get heavier, and on lap 175, the caution flag came out. The cars slowly circled the track until the red flag came out on lap 178 because of heavy rain. Track officials determined that the race could not be restarted, so Darrell Waltrip was declared the winner after 267 miles were complete. Waltrip won $24,000 for the victory. There were 17 lead changes between six drivers. So here's the way they finished. The 300-mile late model sportsman race, October the 8th, 1977 at Charlotte. The winner, driving the number 88, Darrell Waltrip, Owensboro, Kentucky, in a Chevrolet, followed by the number 21, Donnie Allison, Hueytown, Alabama, also in a Chevrolet. Matter of fact, most of the field was in Chevrolets. Dave Marcus, Warsaw, Wisconsin. Ray Hendrick, Richmond, Virginia, was fourth. Dale Earnhardt finished fifth, Kannapolis, North Carolina. Bill Dennis, Glen Allen, Virginia. Morgan Shepherd, Concord, North Carolina. Connie Saylor, Johnson City, Tennessee. Charlie Glotzbach, Edwardsville, Indiana. Finishing 10th, Richard Childress, Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Bobby Fisher, Vero Beach, Florida. Sterling Marlin, Columbia, Tennessee. Jim Poovey, Hickory, North Carolina. Tommy Houston, Conover, North Carolina. Dirt track driver Benny Klontz, Morganton, North Carolina, finished 15th. Followed by Harry Gant, Taylorsville, North Carolina. Jack Nolan, Jacksonville, Florida. Tommy Riggins, Jacksonville, Florida. Randy Tissot, Hollywood, Florida. Gene Morgan from Traveler's Rest, finished 20th. Jack Frazier, Stark, Florida. Junior Crouch, Taylorsville, North Carolina. Wayne Andrews, Staley, North Carolina. Sam Summers, Savannah, Georgia, finishing 25th. Red Farmer, Hueytown, Alabama. Tommy Rabb, Shelby, North Carolina. Lenny Pond, Estrick, Virginia. Joe Milliken, Franklinville, North Carolina. Larry Utzman, Bluff City, Tennessee. Dave Duncan, Winter Haven, Florida, was 30th. Carson Bird, State College, Pennsylvania. Ronnie Davison, Lenore, North Carolina. Jack Ingram, Asheville, North Carolina. Melvin Howard, not sure where he was from, finishing 35th. Chet Williams, Morristown, Tennessee. Dickie Boswell, Berwyn Heights, Maryland. Butch Lindley, Greenville, South Carolina. Billy McGinnis, Griffin, Georgia. Neil Bonnet, Hueytown, Alabama. Finishing 40th, Gene Glover, Kingsport, Tennessee. Clyde Peoples, Shelbyville, Tennessee. Joey Michaels, Baltimore, Maryland. Jimmy Hensley, Martinsville, Virginia. the 44th and final car, Bosco Low, Fletcher, North Carolina. So that's the way they finished.
So the bad thing about having you on chat, Jack, is Bobby can't lean over your shoulder.
Yeah, I know. He's just kind of listless.
Yeah, he's I could concentrate tonight.
Jack, I did notice that that Richard Childress was in that race as a driver in 77. That must have been pretty close to the end of his driving career. I want to say that it was in 1980 that he got the Piedmont Airlines sponsorship, but I can't remember the exact year, but it was sometime close to 80 that he gave up driving and became an owner.
Yeah, I'd say you're correct on that. It was kind of interesting that both Earnhardt and Childress won the heat races.
Yes.
No, the qualifying races. I was telling the guys before we went on the air that I also saw in one of the news reports that there was during time trials, there was a tow truck going through the infield, and on the back of it had a 10-foot dead shark hooked to it with a chicken in its mouth, and all that was to harass Jaws, Darrell Waltrip. So that was kind of interesting.
But wasn't the chicken an allusion to Cale Yarborough and Holly Farms?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because Cale and Waltrip had some problems at Darlington a few weeks earlier.
Yeah, and that's Cale named him Jaws.
Yep, exactly.
That was also at the same time out the James Bond movie that had that man with the steel teeth.
Yeah.
Whose name was Jaws.
Yep.
So another little interesting fact, I assume it's a fact, it was mentioned quickly in one of the news reports, was that Lenny Pond in this race was driving a car that David Pearson was supposed to be driving. And they said Pearson was disqualified. And I can't figure out for the life of me why he was disqualified. It's kind of interesting. I couldn't find any backup on that at all.
Unless he made Bill France mad for some reason.
I don't know.
That was one of his trademarks. If you said the wrong thing or did the wrong thing, that all of a sudden you would find yourself out for a race. Of course, points-wise, that could be major. Although I don't guess David Pearson ever raced for points.
No.
Not at least while he was driving for the Wood Brothers.
There were several dirt track drivers in this race, and also a contingency from Florida, if you noticed.
Yeah, I did. And it was also the several of the Saturday night racers from the Winston-Salem, the Bowling Gray area, too.
Yep, and only two drivers from South Carolina out of the whole 44, so that's kind of interesting.
Well, just as we were talking about not too long before in the show, this was during the era of the little shops on the side of the road that fielded race cars.
Oh, absolutely.
And they didn't, they weren't really what became known as professional racers. They were weekend racers. They made their living fixing cars 5 days a week and raced on the weekends. But that era has been legislated out of existence, just as the stock car has been legislated out of existence, much to my chagrin and a whole lot of others. And I think that's at least in part why NASCAR is not appealing to people anymore.
Yep.
But I don't know what you do to fix it.
I noticed that Woody on chat said that Lenny Pond was driving Hoss Ellington's car, and that is absolutely correct. He was. But why Pearson was disqualified, I couldn't figure it out.
Remember that race that Pearson took off and all the tires fell off of his car?
Yeah, that was
at Darlington.
The Wood Brothers car, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, all four of them fell off.
Yep.
I thought it was just the left side came off.
Anyway, some of them fell off. Maybe it was the left side.
They were.
And if you look at the pictures when that happened, the guy running up beside the car to help him, you know who that is?
I don't know.
Arlo Reynolds.
No kidding.
Yeah, that's him. Arlo and I were talking about that the other day. He was on the Winter Brothers crew at the time.
Is he the one that left the lug nuts off?
it was obviously a miscommunication between the jack man and the tire man and Pearson.
Apparently,
how do you put the wheels on and leave all the lug nuts off?
Well, I think what probably happened was they were going to do a four. The wrench man thought they were going to do a four tire change, and the man calling the shot said two tires. So
I think that's
they had pulled the lug nuts off of the left side, and. Never changed the tires.
But so then when they dropped the jack.
When they dropped the jack on the right side, he took off. Mm-hmm. Much to the dismay of the guy using the wrench on the left side.
But anyway, that ultimately led to the demise of Pearson and the Wood Brothers. That was sort of the beginning of the end.
That was a real pit road screw up, and they were known for their pit road expertise, not for their screw-ups. And apparently that was a real blow to their ego.
Something like Pearson came back and won the Southern 500 driving Hoss Ellington's car after that.
He was subbing for Dale, wasn't he?
He won a race at Darlington in the Hawaiian Tropic car after the pit road deal.
Huh. So. Well, that's cool stuff, guys. That's been a great show. Wonderful show.
The Chili Bowl starting tonight, by the way, for those who you can keep up with it on Twitter also and everywhere else.
We can't watch it somewhere?
I don't think it comes on until, it probably is on some kind of pay-per-view, but it's on
MAV. It's on MAV. Yeah, MAV TV. They are expecting ice out in Tulsa, ice storm, so that may be interesting. Even though this is indoors, you got to get to the stadium.
Yep. So. Yeah, this year set a new record for entries, something like 370 cars.
That's a bucket list thing for me. I'd love to go. Jack, let's go next year. You want to?
Yeah, you still got a van?
No, I can get one, though.
Now we'll get about three cases of beer and take off.
Sounds good, man. Let's do
all
it.
All right, who all is going to Daytona for the vintage parade this year?
Well, Jack's going.
Hugh's going.
Hugh's got his hand up.
Yeah, I don't know yet. I don't know if I'm going or not at this point.
The jury is still out. Well, I'm going because my wife is, as last year, has found us a Caribbean cruise right after the parade. So.
She's good with the cruise. Hey,
you can say what you want to about the old boy, but he's got it figured out.
I'm not so sure it's me. I think it's her. But, you know, it makes a great way to get your wife to go with you. She said, oh, yeah, I found last year. Oh, no, I'm not going. 30 minutes later, she came back in the den and said, I think I will go. I found us a cruise.
All right, we're going to cruise on out of here tonight, folks. Thanks for all of you that helped put this thing together. Cody was going to be on late. He didn't make it, but hope everything's all right with Cody. Jack, glad to have you outside the studio. I mean, we'd rather have you in here, but it's good that you came on Skype. Tim, always a pleasure to get you in from the lair. And Bobby and Jack, thanks for showing up. Thanks for all you guys doing what you do. Thanks to the fans that tune in and put up with us and all that. But as we always end this show, we want to say a special thanks to the men and women that serve in our military. Thank you for doing what you do so that we can do this. Each and every one of you, good night and God bless.